Hello and welcome in to another Abundance of Not. It is August 27th. Garrett here with Brad and Wade on Wade's Friday.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, how can we have another of nothing?
Well, it's more nothing.
It's yeah. Another edition of more nothing.
Yeah, another bunch of nothingness. How you doing, guys?
Great.
Yeah, we're doing good.
Fantastic. We're doing nothing. Actually.
Yeah.
You're doing notness.
We've just right. opened up a whole nother discussionary argument there.
Not to be confused with naughtiness, so that's a totally different situation.
It is, yes. I am fresh out of naughtiness and doing plenty of notness.
Notness.
Notness, yes.
Also not to be confused with Nautilus, the legendary...
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Captain submarine. Nemo?
That's correct.
All right, and with that, how was your weekend?
Don't judge me. yeah, how's that was weekend? Good? Bad?
Weekend was good. Paintball. Took my oldest son paintballing. Youngest son had some time alone with mom. They went out and did some fun stuff, so I took oldest and we went paintballing.
Youngest is still nursing his wound, so it wouldn't really be fair for him to go anyway, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
What was the wound? I'm just trying to remember
when
here.
When he fractured his arm.
Yeah, he fractured his arm playing soccer.
Okay, he's got a cast on. He's got armor. What the hell?
Yeah, unfortunately, well... Fortunately for him, unfortunately for trying to play paintball, it is a soft cast. It's just a wrap with a splint. Okay. So, yeah, it wouldn't have done him much good.
I was about to say, it kind of restricts him from pulling the trigger. So I guess that is the...
Yes.
But soft cast.
Yep.
But something was special with your paintball excursion this weekend.
Apart from taking my son for his first time?
Yes, there was another first time, if I remember right.
There was a first time. So I got a new marker and tried it out for the first time.
A marker is?
A paintball gun.
No, it's a Sharpie felt tip.
Color
stuff.
Just letting our audience know.
No, absolutely.
It's a marker.
No, the paintball community tends to avoid the use of the word gun. They're paintball markers. So yeah, I got a new, it's a pistol type. Yeah. So it's a pistol type marker. It's a Tippmann, TIPX, a Tippex pistol, sidearm. So yeah, I got to try that out, broke that in this weekend.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was actually, I was very impressed with its performance. It shot a little truer even than my main marker, which was already pretty good.
It's technology for you, I guess. Your main marker's, what, 10 years old?
Probably four.
Yeah.
Four or five, yeah.
Newer than mine, yeah.
Yep, so. Good weekend.
Awesome. Wade, how about you? Do anything fun and exciting on your days off and or weekend?
Nothing really fun and exciting on my day off, mainly, you know. Games, but we did see Sin City.
Yes, we did go and see Sin City on Saturday, which we will touch base on here in a minute.
And luckily on Friday, this upcoming Friday, As Above, So Below is out.
That's correct. The horror movie, we'll get into that shortly. Cool. Let's see here, weekend-wise, I don't know. Oh, we talked about last week or so that video that I saw about sound quality and the compression and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, we did.
And I mentioned that I picked up a record player.
Yes.
So Saturday I found a semi-local record shop. I happened to be up in the area and picked up a couple records. I haven't compared. One of the records is a Linkin Park album that I have digitally, so I haven't compared the two yet. Novelty is cool. I'm not sure if at least the record player that I have is of the highest quality, so I'm not necessarily taking full advantage of the lack of compression to the music. But we picked up a couple albums, so we've been playing that here off and on, and I've been doing some research on keeping records in tip-top shape. In addition to seeing Sin City on Saturday, there was another free concert in the park.
Oh, that's right. That's what I was
That we went to on Sunday. It was with I don't remember his name. I think he was the lead singer for Journey before their main guy came on board. And then he was also involved with Santana. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when he was with Santana. So we got to see a free concert there. Wasn't blown away. I think the guy tried to play a lot more of his original stuff and not so many of the songs that people knew and associated.
I think it was mainly because he wasn't a singer, wasn't the singer time when their more popular stuff came out. It may be copyright or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know he did do one big Santana song that actually got people up and out of their chairs, but the rest of the stuff he played was a little more obscure. And he even admitted one of them, a song he started writing many years ago, and he only finished a couple years back. So it's really a song no one's heard. But yeah, I guess at a free concert, you can't complain too much. So
But I think most of the people saw, I mean, people were leaving well before the concert was done. Because people were kind of sitting there going, well, we have this guy from Journey. We want to hear Journey songs.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything there. So people were like, well, later.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're not paying anything for it, you don't feel guilty about getting up and walking away either. So it's definitely goes both ways. But aside from that, I think that's about it on this end. Brad, do you have any big plans for the 3-day weekend coming up?
No, actually, nothing big.
Okay.
Just kind of kicking back, taking it easy.
Nice.
I love those days.
Yep. They're wonderful things.
Let's see, Wade, you've got a court case coming up tomorrow, actually.
Yep, for the truck, yeah.
Your truck, hopefully try to get some resolution to that. And I will be heading out of town for the 3-day weekend.
Decent night's sleep, woo!
There you go. I'm going to go out to see my dad out at his place at the river. And take my daughter out there and have hopefully a good fun time and try not to get sunburned.
So that's always a good thing to avoid.
Exactly. So that's the plan. And we'll see what happens. But with that, we're going to jump into some movies. We got some decent movies coming out. Well, I say decent. Decent maybe
down my variety.
A bit of a stretch.
A bit of a stretch, yeah. But we got a few titles coming out here, and some of these actually got a little bit of interesting backstory to them. So coming out, as Wade mentioned, is As Above, So Below. Currently has no critic rating per Rotten Tomatoes, and the budget has not yet been posted. So there's a whole
And it comes out Friday, and we know nothing?
Pretty much. Well, we don't know how good or bad it is, and we don't know how much it cost them to do. But the synopsis is, I'm going to try to read this and not totally butcher it. Miles of twisted catacombs lie beneath the streets of Paris, the eternal home of countless souls. When a team of explorers ventures into the uncharted maze of bones, they uncover the secret of what the city of the dead was meant to contain. A journey into madness and terror, as above, so below, reaches deep into the human psyche to reveal the personal demons that come back to haunt us all.
They could have not released that last part, because I'm always a proponent of what we don't know scares us the most.
Sure.
That's when it annoys me, when horror movies are like, oh, she's haunted. Okay, so we know it's a ghost. All right,
Well, I mean, you kind of get it from the trailers. You get the vibe that it's personal traumas, because the one kid sees his brother, one guy sees a piano that... matches one from his memories. One guy freaks out over a burning car.
You get sucked in.
So you definitely have some understanding that whatever's going on is tied to the people directly.
Still, you could have had so it's somewhat tied to their past, but there it's like, yeah, here's a deep, dark secret they're all holding. It's like, oh, okay, there's a great thing. I mean, I would much rather watch... I mean, this is why... The reasons why the second, third, and fourth Paranormal Activity just sucked. Because people knew what it was.
Yeah.
You know, in the first one, people were like, okay, this is scary. What the hell is going on here?
Sure.
But now it's like, okay, it's that demon.
Yeah.
We know this.
Fair enough. Also coming out this week is The November Man. Critics are not in love with this at 39% per Rotten Tomatoes. The production company has not released its budget, so that's a big mystery for us. Essentially, the story of a highly trained ex-CIA agent who's been enjoying a quiet life in Switzerland and then is lured out of retirement for one last mission. He must protect a valuable witness, and then he soon uncovers the assignment marks him as a target for the for a former friend and CIA protege.
His understudy, protege. Basically. Yes.
That's kind of what protege means. Hmm. So, I mean, I thought the trailers for this looked interesting, although it kind of had the vibe of
007?
Yeah, Bond meets Bourne Identity Hitman type of thing.
Wasn't the guy... Who's the lead in this?
Pierce Brosnan.
And was a 007, wasn't he?
Yes.
So there we go. I mean, it's like 007, not named 007.
Yeah. So, interesting there. Also coming out, and I'm not sure to what degree... as far as widespread release, or if it's more of a kind of a local or a limited release, a movie called Start Up. This is a British crime movie at 98%. It's got a budget of £2 million, and this has already been released in England/Britain. I'm not sure which one is the politically correct version anymore, so I'll say both. Mm-hmm. And it's already pulled in £45 million.
England is a country. Britain is short for Great Britain, which is a collection of countries.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Seemingless, worthless piece of historical knowledge. let's see here. I'm not even sure if I want to get into the synopsis. It's actually quite long. But it's a British crime movie, and the critics who have seen it really liked it. So if you're into criminal dramas and you're a fan of the British accent, by all means, go see it. Assuming it comes out in your local area.
What was the budget?
£2 million. And I think the pound is about
$3,800. Or $3.8 million.
So almost $4
million. Yeah, the exchange rate is $1.66 per pound. So.
Okay.
If you guys want to do the math there and call us out if we're wrong, go ahead.
That's $3.3 million then, based on your exchange rate.
Yeah.
Another movie that came out that is a foreign flick. This is a French animated movie by the name of The Congress. I'm not going to try to pronounce the French version. This has a budget of €8 million, which is pretty strong. This is more than two decades after catapulting to stardom with The Princess Bride. An aging actress playing a version of herself decides to take her final job, preserving her digital likeness for future Hollywood. Through the deal brokered by her loyal, longtime agent and the head of the Paramount Studios, her alias will be controlled by the studio and will star in any film they want with no restrictions. So, kind of an interesting deal there, because we're actually seeing a similar situation to that with people like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was cast and planned to be in the next Hunger Games, and he unfortunately left us earlier this year. So they have come out and said they're going to do a digital representation of him in the movie to try to preserve the continuity character to character.
Kind of like a Tron thing.
Yeah, but Tron, they used an actor and then the digital version of his younger self.
Yeah.
So this, we actually, with Hunger Games, we're seeing a true digital representation of someone who's no longer with us. So then this is an animated movie to just further accentuate that. But now the studio, per the synopsis, gets full rights to use the rendered actress in any film that they see fit.
What was that one movie? People had like time on their wrists, but they like never age past 25.
In Time or Out of Time?
It sounded kind of like this one.
It's Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried and Olivia Wilde.
Hmm.
That was a good movie.
I found it rather interesting, although I thought they could have gone a lot of different directions with it than the corporate, not really espionage, but conspiracy factor.
Evil corporate bad guys.
Yeah. So that was interesting. interesting direction they took with it.
It was there, and there's a movie recommendation. Go watch that.
Yeah, no, it's. I don't think the critics love that one all that much, but when I did finally get around to see it, I thought it was an interesting concept. I don't know, maybe I expected a little bit more out of it. I'm not sure. But I enjoyed it.
Go watch it, people, and tell us what you think.
Yep. Finally coming out, we have a fairly low-budget movie. It's called Life of Crime. It's got It's got a 62% critic rating and a budget of $12 million. Based on a novel, The Switch, Life of Crime is a dark caper comedy starring Jennifer Aniston, John Hawkes, or Hawkes, and a slew of other people. Ella Fisher is also in this. I love her. She's funny. She's the redhead from Wedding Crashers. The younger one. Yeah. Anyway, the wife of a corrupt real estate developer is kidnapped by two common criminals. What makes a criminal common, anyway? I don't know.
She's not organized.
Is that what it is?
It's not organized
crime? It could be possible.
It tends to be more opportunistic criminals.
The criminals intend to extort him with inside information about his crooked business and offshore accounts, but the husband decides he's actually rather not pay the ransom to get it back his wife, setting off an unbelievable sequence of double crosses and plot twists that could only come from the mind of Elmore Leonard, who is the author of the novel this is based on. Phew, there's that. Okay. Box office stuff. This is the fun stuff, right? It's what we all really care about. No one else cares about what's coming out. It's all BS. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy pulls in top billing again this week at $17.6 million. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at $16.8 million. For as bad as a critic rating as that movie's getting, it's pulling in some decent money.
Which one was this? Sorry.
Turtles.
Again, just goes to prove my concept. Ignore the critics. If it sounds interesting, go see it. If it doesn't, don't.
I think it's making a lot of money on the nostalgia of people from, say, our generation who kind of grew up with the Turtles. And, I mean, they've rebooted the series, so there's a new following with the younger kids. So people are just going to go, they're going to see it by, for association.
Take their kids, too, and they're like, we watched these guys when I was little. And
yeah.
So you get that multiple family, cha-ching in there, too.
I agree. I think if you didn't have... Obviously, the movie was a standalone, didn't have some of the pedigree that it does. It definitely wouldn't be doing as well as it is. But it's a theme people can relate to because they've dealt with it or had it around for a long time. Third in the box office is If I Stay. This is that kind of sappy girl gets injured and has to make a
life decision.
Big life decision of staying in a hometown or going off to a Juilliard for music. That pulled in $16.4 million, and the comedy Let's Be Cops pulls in $11 million. Now, previously, the budget for that was not listed. It is now posted at $17 million for Let's Be Cops, and they've well exceeded that. Honorable mentions.
That's good for business.
What's that?
I said that's good for business.
Definitely. Well, it's easy to exceed your budget when your budget is low. So.
Yes.
Two guys screwing around in an old cop car. Done.
Yeah, right. Honorable mentions this week is When the Game Stands Tall. This is the high school sports football movie. Pulled in $9 million against its unpreviously published budget of $15 million. And Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, pulled in $6.5 million against their $70 million budget. And with that, Wade, Sin City thoughts, please.
Not a movie to take your children to. Lots of violence, lots of nudity. Yeah. And granted, you're getting it with, was it Frank Meyer? Miller? Sin City?
I'm not sure.
I think it was something like that. You know, you know what you get when you get when you have a movie called Sin City. But, I mean, there was some pretty decent actors in there. I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Bruce Willis, Jessica Alba, Eva Green, Josh Brolin. I forget the guy's name. He was in a season of 24. Was also in. He does the Allstate commercials. Black guy. He's in it.
Yep.
Forget his name. Ray Liotta had a small appearance. Lady Gaga had a quick appearance in the movie. Yeah, huge lineup of people. This is definitely a movie that if you saw the first one and you liked it, you will like this. It is definitely a more of the same type of movie. You know, if you didn't like the first one, don't expect to like this.
There is a bit of a cringe moment. I'm just going to say the hand.
Yeah.
It's just, if you go watch the movie after this, you'll know exactly what I mean.
Yep. So, but I mean, we enjoyed it. We liked the first one. It's definitely based on a series of comic books, for those who didn't know. And it definitely maintains the theme and the style of the first movie. So if you did like the first one and you haven't gone out to see it yet, then you will inevitably like this one. And I'm pretty sure that's as thorough and as non-spoiler as we can be.
Yeah.
And with that, Brad, to the news.
So we start on a fairly lighthearted note this week. In follow-up to our coverage last week of the whole patent mess, and how the whole patent system is just not working well, we're also going to touch base on the ongoing lawsuit between Samsung and Apple. Samsung filed a motion requesting that two of Apple's patents be invalidated. This is the slide to unlock patent and the unified search. You know how on an iPhone you can go to a single search bar and search the entire phone?
Yes.
No matter what app it's in, you know, mail or notes or doesn't matter. You put it in one search box and it finds everything.
Yeah. Yes.
So Apple owns a patent on that and also the slide to unlock, and Samsung filed to have both those patents invalidated, stating that they were fairly obvious and not really patentable material. As we had discussed, I believe it was last week, a lot of Apple's patents had been challenged and found to be fairly common material. However, in this case, the judge threw out Samsung's motion, stating you should have filed sooner. We're now, I don't even remember, a year and a half, 2 years into this lawsuit. You know, essentially it was a case of, now you're bringing this up?
Sure.
Yeah, you could have said that, you know, 2 years ago.
But Your Honor, we didn't know we needed this 2 years ago.
Yeah.
How to say this? They kind of got to it first. I have to say that, you know, they get that. Apple being getting the slide thing. I mean, what is such the big deal? I mean, you could do tap the phone screen 5 times.
Yeah, there's ways around it.
There's all sorts of things. You got the pattern unlock. That's not just a swipe. It's a pattern. You could do the fingerprint, even though Apple has that. I don't know if that's a patent or not.
I don't believe it is.
You could do the multiple tap. You could hold it for a couple seconds.
Yep. Voice, there's ways around it.
You know, there's all sorts of different things you could do.
So it kind of strikes me as a point. It's like, why are you guys complaining about this swipe release when you could do 20 billion other things to unlock the phone?
Because if they do put it in the phone, because people are familiar with it, like it is on the Samsungs, they have to pay Apple royalties.
So do something different.
They have to buy the license to utilize that feature because Apple technically owns it. That's how patents work.
I'm just saying, it's like, well, if you don't want to pay for that patent, use the 20 billion other things you could do to open a phone.
I agree with that statement, and they do offer multiple things. But if you're trying to get people from Apple to Samsung, you want to try to have some consistency so people don't get like overwhelmed with too many differences, but also entice them with the features that you do have.
And I'm going to disagree with you there.
You would.
Of course I would. No, I think Wade's actually on the right track on this one. Do something different. Instead of copying everything or trying to be just like, do it different and do it better.
Sure.
I mean, hell, if I had something to bring up the, what's it called? The statistics of what's selling more? It's probably the Apple, the iPhone.
And I don't know.
Maybe, but that's going to probably kick in when the iPhone 6 comes in.
Well, Apple is leading sales for versus a single model, but Android is definitely owning the market when you factor in
operating system.
You know, the 500 different models of Android you can get.
Yep. Nope, that's fair.
So, no, I agree on this one. It's you know, Apple came up with this concept, so beat them at their own game. Instead of copying them outright, do something better.
I mean, the thing is that I always see this. It's the same in the gaming market where I have seen MMOs major jump, have just fallen because they're too much like World of Warcraft. People will go, why do I want to switch to this if I already have time invested in this, and this is basically the exact same thing with a different skin?
Yep.
Yep. No, I agree.
Make it unique. Make it stand out. Yeah.
Sure.
Make it unique, make it better, and you will sell.
Well, Apple's doing other things to try to keep themselves maybe out of the lawsuit here. If you have an Apple iPhone and you bought it between September 2012 in January 2013, you may be eligible for a free battery replacement. Apparently, there was a flaw in, quote, a very small percentage of devices that were sold in that time frame that provoke or cause a sudden loss in the battery charge. Apple stated they will replace the battery. They started replacing batteries on August 22nd this year, which was last Friday. And they said, if you are eligible, there is a serial tracker. So if, I put the link on our show notes. Go to the link and type in the device serial number, and it will tell you if you're eligible or not for a free battery replacement. Apple has said that if you did pay to replace your battery and it was an eligible device, they will be refunding you that cost.
Good.
And additionally, they said that... let's see here. I have a couple different notes here, so I just want to make sure. The battery obviously only applies to the battery. If you have other damages on the phone, cracked screen, whatever, you would definitely be liable for the repairs involved in changing that out. So if you dropped your phone somewhere or cracked the screen, Apple's not going to replace that for you because they're replacing your battery. That is definitely a cost.
Yeah, a dying battery did not crack your screen.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's pretty cool, though, because
That's the way a warranty works. I see no problem with that. A warranty doesn't cover you being neglectful or reckless with your phone. It covers defects in manufacture. These batteries they've identified have a defect, and that's all they're going to replace.
Correct. Now, my issue with Apple and the battery is that my last phone, my iPhone 4S, it had what I would call an insufficient battery life. And when I called to see about getting the battery changed, the guy who answered the phone, first of all, didn't know off the top of his head what it costs. And when he finally came back to me with the cost, it was the same amount of money as it would cost me to upgrade to the next phone. They wanted $200 to replace the screen. And it sounded like, well, it costs $200 for you to upgrade to the next phone, so that's what we'll charge you to replace the screen on this one, because we want you to upgrade to the next phone.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
You know, but that's just shady to me. Like, it should cost $100 to replace the screen. If you want to upgrade to the next phone, great, that's $200. But why are you going to hold people over the fire to get the next version because you don't want to replace the screen on the phone they have now?
Because they can?
Yeah. And I mean, that's why you've got places that are literally called broken iPhone stores that you can take your phone to and have them replace it for $100 as opposed to paying Apple's two or whatever price they decide to tell you that day.
Yep.
So
even another shady practice is back when I had an Android, I think it was like an Air or something. It was time when it came time to upgrade. It's like I got a text message saying that I had a $30. Credit to the account.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you go in there and it's like, well, we have a $30 upgrade fee. It's like, you guys are... I can't say that word because this is not an explicit podcast. But yeah, it's like, geez, you just did this to get me into the store.
I have gotten that $30 upgrade charge waived almost every time.
Okay.
Yeah. I would call that creative marketing, though.
Sure. They
got you into the store.
Yeah.
It's called a bait and switch. It's a sales tactic. We'll tease you with a good price or a deal to get you in. And then once you're in the store and we think we've pretty much got you, oh, by the way, that's now this charge, or oh, this fee applies, or...
Yeah, it was just...
Whatever. It's called a bait and switch. It's not it's not anything new.
That's not a bait and switch, though. They didn't lie to you. They didn't give you something substandard by lying to you.
No, but they...
I'm not sure that's a bait and switch.
It's kind of a bait and switch, because they baited you into the store. It's not necessarily that it's a lie, but they did something to get you into the store thinking you're going to get a deal. You got a $30 credit. Okay, cool. Whatever phone I get, I can now discount by $30. That's exactly a bait. You get in there. Okay, yeah, you have a $30 credit, but that's going to go to the $30 upgrade fee that you now have to pay because you're getting a new phone and re-enlisting in our contract. That's the switch factor. But you can call up customer service almost every time, complain that you're frustrated about, you know, this upgrade fee or the stupid tax that at least we in California have to pay on the total retail price of the phone, not on the transaction, which is a load of crap. And usually so you get something credited.
When you get a new phone, you have to pay the tax on the $700 that the phone
costs? Correct. If you go in and I hypothetically speaking, if you have an iPhone 4S and the iPhone 6 comes out, you've waited your 2 years, you're eligible for an upgrade, you get the phone for, let's say, $200 transaction. But the retail value of that phone is $699.
Mm-hmm.
They charge you tax on $699, even though you're only paying $200.
Wow.
Yeah.
That stinks.
That's crap. And I guarantee you that not every cent of that tax is going for tax. Because if you go buy a $40,000 car and you pay $32,000 for it, you only pay $32,000 worth of tax on it. The mobile electronic industry is the only industry that I've seen that charges tax on the value, not on the transaction. And it's BS.
And only in California.
I can only say California. I don't know of anywhere else if they do or don't in other places. But we see it here. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that stinks.
Hopefully something else that doesn't stink. And actually, probably does not, because people who were afraid of the YouTube copyright mechanic that they have won't technically have to worry about it on Twitch, because Google doesn't have Twitch. Amazon does.
Or at least is in the process of.
Nope.
It's confirmed?
It's confirmed. They went for a cool $970 million.
They went under a billion.
Woo! Oh wow, that was a cheap buy.
Yeah. So you know, was it Amazon went shopping instead of went selling for once?
Yeah.
But this is good news for us.
Yeah, and the president or CEO, Emmett Scheer. That's SH. EAR, so I don't know if I'm actually saying that
probably
correctly.
Sheer,
thank you. Sent out a email to the community members, myself
this is
included.
The Twitch CEO?
Yes.
Okay.
A letter from Twitch CEO, yes.
Okay.
And so I'm going to paraphrase this as we don't have enough time to read the entire thing. It says, it is unbelievable that slightly more than 3 years ago, Twitch did not exist. What we and the community have done is truly profound. Your passion and talent, you know, and for gaming, your dedication to gaming, your memes has made Twitch what it is today. You know, together we found new ways of connecting developers and publishers with their fans. We've created a whole new kind of career lets people make living sharing their love of games. Further goes on to, I am pleased to announce we have been acquired by Amazon. We choose Amazon because they believe in our community, they share our values, our long-term vision, and they want to help us get there faster.
And they're not going to mess with our gamers like exactly. Google wanted to.
Well, the big thing with that is the competition, not the monopoly.
Yeah. It says, we're keeping most of everything the same. Our offices, our employees, our band, and most importantly, our independence. But with Amazon's support, we'll have the resources to bring you even better Twitch. I personally want to thank you, each and every member of the Twitch community. So, yeah, you know, we won't have to deal with the YouTube copyright, automatic copyright, takedown, infringement, whatever system that they have. So that's a major plus, even though I think last podcast we did talk about the automagical system that they have that YouTube used to use. So,
well, I think you're still going to get some degree of probably maybe a little bit stronger restrictions.
But that was dealt more with audio. So
yeah, but I think Amazon now being a bigger fish are going to be a little bit more aware of some of the legalities that maybe Twitch themselves weren't or weren't as concerned with because they weren't the, the big guy with the deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And so you still may see some restrictions from a revenue generating standpoint if you're a content publisher, so to speak, for Twitch, because Amazon has to protect themselves.
Oh yeah,
and all the legality stuff. So I wouldn't expect it to stay completely the same as it is now, but hopefully better.
It'd be interesting to see what Amazon does with it.
Yeah, well, hopefully so.
Let's also be honest. This may, you know, kind of, how do I say this? Keep the bullies at bay, to where some may realize that, okay, Twitch before the acquisition, you know, oh, we could probably muscle them around a little bit, manhandle them a little bit for extra revenue. Oh, but now they have a bigger brother in the form of Amazon.
Yep.
Who is, you know, willing to put up the shield and go, no, you can't do that. You can't increase their hike for that particular artist or whatever.
Yep, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
You know, it's, heck, I don't know the statistics. I probably should have brought this up, but, you know, Amazon, I guess, has a lot of share with, you know, people buying music.
Yeah, well, they do roughly. That. They've got the stuff with the Prime. Stuff like
that. You know, how hard would it be to go like, okay, we're blacklisting, I think it's the right term, that artist's, what's it called? We're no longer doing deals with that particular artist.
Sure.
Boom. You know, destroys that. But, you know, whatever. Just thinking of ways that Amazon could
throw their weight around.
Yeah.
No, agreed.
Well, they're already doing that with the book publisher, yeah, so it's not it's definitely not outside of the realm of possibility.
Agreed.
So. Yep. And this has been, you know, met with global praise for gamers around the board. You know, we won't have to deal with YouTube
solely,
unless you want to post your vlogs onto YouTube, which then. You're probably already going with the same standards YouTube has already put up.
Yep, fair enough. Brad, back to you. Take it away.
All right. So, in science news...
Science
for the win. China has moved a step forward in their technological advancements, announcing a new technology from a team of scientists have... come up with a way to make submarines travel faster underwater. And we're not just talking a slight increase in speed, we're talking about a significant increase in speed.
So like 15 miles an hour, not 5.
how about on the realm of the speed of sound underwater? Being able to complete the journey from Shanghai to San Francisco in just under 2 hours.
I call shenanigans.
you call shenanigans. Well, that is completely your right to. They have developed, well, they have progressed. They didn't invent the underlying physics, but they have progressed a technique known as supercavitation.
Okay.
That say that five times fast, Jesus.
Supercavitation.
Okay. That encases the vessel in a bubble of air, so it's not having to deal with the friction of the water. And by pushing the air bubble forward and keeping the submarine suspended in it, they're able to go much faster.
What are they using for propulsion, though? Because the entire way a submarine travels is interaction with the friction of the water with the propellers.
How about a jet engine?
That was going to be my question.
It's technically a plane underwater.
With no wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So the Soviets were able to do this with a torpedo, and they were able to get it to travel at 370 kilometers an hour.
Okay.
Which we will do the
about
conversion.
200 and change miles per hour.
Okay. But, sorry, just doing a quick conversion here. And I typed that in wrong. But the Chinese think that they will be able to get the submarine going, in theory at least, at 3,600 miles an hour.
3,600?
Which is the speed of 3,600 miles an hour.
That's like Mach 3.
Well, accounting for density, that's the speed of sound through water.
That different, huh?
Wow.
Because the speed of sound on land is about 632 miles an hour, and the air it's 700 and change. So it's five times as much in water? That's crazy.
Just doing some... so the speed of sound at sea level, is 761 miles an hour.
Okay. I've seen rocket guys. I remember Guinness Book of World Records published a rocket car that they claim broke the sound barrier at 632 miles an hour on the ground, but I don't know what elevation that was at.
Yeah, exactly. It gets easier to do the higher up you go.
Sure.
So, anyway,
five times the speed, that's crazy.
The biggest problem that they've had is getting it to enter the supercavitation state. First of all, the submerged vessel, so you start off in water,
mm-hmm.
and you have to get to a speed somewhere around 100 kilometers an hour before you can even start to form the bubble. And that is really fast for a underwater vessel.
So how are they creating the bubble, though? Are they injecting air in front of the submarine? Because you would think at that speed, obviously, you'd be leaving a bubble behind where the water hasn't...
Sure.
formed again, so how are they generating the forward bubble?
Yeah, the article doesn't go into the exact specifics of how they form it. They do say it is very difficult to form and difficult to control, which I think goes down as the understatement of this entire article.
Right.
Too slow and
the air just goes up to the surface. And
right.
You got to get up to that speed to maintain that. Because essentially what they're doing is using water and air tension around the surface of the submarine. Like a water strider can, like, walk on water.
Yep.
Trying to do that only with a little cushion of air.
So
I can visualize it, but obviously the mechanics are far beyond me.
Yeah. So the thing that the Soviets ran into was obviously getting it that fast. Now, the Soviets were working with torpedoes.
Yep.
So, you know, you can fire a torpedo out of a tube and have it going that initial velocity, whereas the Chinese are working on a submarine that, in theory at least, will be able to carry passengers.
Yeah, and start at zero miles per hour and have to increase.
Exactly. So they've come up with a way of let me find it here so I get it right. It's called a... Oh man, I just had it.
Do we know what...
A liquid membrane technology that they are able to spray on the outside of the submarine that essentially reduces its friction coefficient through water.
Yep.
And by constantly applying this as they're speeding up, they're able to reduce the friction on the vessel until it reaches the speed at which it can enter this supercavitation state. And then once there, they can actually do differential steering, because that was the other problem the Soviets had, was once you're in this air bubble, you can't steer.
Yeah, because your steering in a submarine is based on interaction with the water.
Exactly. Now, for the Soviets, this wasn't a problem. They were shooting a torpedo in a straight line at a target.
Yep.
To be able to steer this, though, with this membrane, this liquid membrane technology, because of the way it reduces friction when it's applied, they can actually do differential steering by applying more to one side of the vessel or the other, reducing the friction more on one side.
That makes sense. Have they published at what depth they're looking to target for usability?
No. That wasn't in the article, at least.
Because that would allow more ammunition to the speed variant from air and surface to underwater. Obviously, the deeper you go, the more tension and pressure you're going to have to be dealing with.
Yep.
So, okay. That's interesting, though. I'd be curious to see if they progress with it or if they just patent it for safekeeping.
Well, supposedly there are a few countries working on this technology. Most countries are not releasing any details because it's classified as, you know, potential military use.
Yep.
It appears, though, that the Chinese are looking at this for civilian use, and they have no problem talking about it. So, you know, whatever, guys.
Yep, I agree. Well, shifting gears back, maybe downshifting, back to Apple. There's an article today it's been out for a couple days now, on a few reasons why the iPhone 6 sales may be, quote, absolutely bonkers. I didn't come up with it. That's what they wrote.
I was going to say, is that a scientific term?
Apparently. I mean, it's good enough for media, I guess.
I wonder at what point that
becomes, you know, a unit of measure.
Yeah, a standardized unit of measure. Is that like a couple million a day? I don't know.
Yep, I couldn't tell you. But a few of these numbers make me think and scratch my head at this statement. So the first factor of the potential quantity of sales is the upgrade factor. It is published that 1/3 of current iPhone users plan to upgrade their phones by the end of the year. Only 1/3? 33%. Doesn't sound very high to me.
But that's still a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, but I don't know. I expected it to be higher. This is per the source of ComScore, ComScore. 40% of iPhone 4S users, which is the most popular iPhone in use right now, say that they will upgrade. Only 40% of iPhone 4 users? Not by any time period, just said they'll upgrade. Okay. Nearly 25% of iPhone 5S owners that are not eligible for upgrade because the 5S just came out said they'll get an iPhone 6. 25%? For the loyalty factor that is usually associated with Apple, to me those numbers seem low. No other opinions?
So,
no?
Okay. Here we're starting to get into the problem that we discussed several episodes ago with the iPad. And that is, when you get a product to such a point, and there's no doubt Apple does magnificent work. I'm not dissing on Android here as a operating system. I think it is very powerful. But because it's so fragmented, you know, you've got a bunch of these plastic phones.
Sure.
Apple spends so much time on refinement. They may not have all the features, but that's because the features they did put in are so absolutely refined.
Okay.
Once you start refining it to that point where upgrades become incremental, where's the there's no more momentous wow factor to drive you to upgrade.
So you're saying that at some point that it's feasible that people, if Apple stays on the trend of micro upgrades because they've already hit that epitome of wow factor, that at some point their business will fall off because they're not making big enough changes?
I think that's very possible. I don't know that it'll fall off, you know, to the point of driving them bankrupt. But I think it'll definitely flatten out. They won't see these end over, you know, quarter over quarter gains in market share. Those that are happy with Android will be happy with Android, and those that are happy with iPhone will be happy with iPhone, and it'll come to the point. I mean, I have an iPhone 5. I didn't get the 5S.
Sure.
There were a few things, you know, I looked at it and went, well, they're kind of nice, but nothing really compelling. I'm hanging out for the 6 announcement based on some of the rumors of what's coming. It sounds like an impressive thing, but the only major difference is going to be screen size, by the sounds of things, and a little faster.
Yeah, and they're
okay.
They're
well, if I'm happy with the screen size, and if my phone is fast enough, then where's my drive to upgrade?
Sure. And speaking of the press announcement, that's supposed to be September 9th,
according yes, it is.
To another article that we will get to later. Number two on the reasons why the sales should be bonkers is the bigger screen factor that we've been talking about fairly consistently. Over previous podcasts. Obviously, they're trying to compete with Samsung and the, quote, screen envy that iPhone owners are seeing with the Samsungs. Obviously, previous iPhone users wanted the bigger screen, only had one option, and that was to leave Apple. Obviously, we have a 4.7 and a 5.5-inch coming out, and per Morgan Stanley's KD...
Rumored.
No, it's confirmed. We'll get to
okay.
that. We'll get to that in a minute. According to Morgan Stanley's Katie Huberty, quote, "We expect large screen iPhones to drive meaningful upgrade cycle or drive a meaningful upgrade cycle." Great. Thanks, Captain Obvious. In my opinion.
So, if rumors are to be believed,
okay,
we. Talking about screen envy here. So we have rumors and mostly confirmed about a 4.7 and a 5.5 phone.
Yes.
Then we have a 7 point something inch iPad mini.
Yes.
The 10 inch iPad Air.
Yes.
And one rumor, unsubstantiated, of a 12.7 inch iPad large, whatever they're going to call it.
I haven't heard that one, but I do know that Samsung has a 12.2-inch tablet. I saw it at
you
Costco.
Know, for Apple being a two-trick show, you know, you had the phone or the iPad, and these were the sizes, and if you wanted it, buy it, and if not, go somewhere else.
Yeah, well, the problem is so many people went somewhere else that they finally wised up.
But did they, though? I mean,
clearly,
Apple keeps trading places with Exxon for the most valuable company in the world. They're not hurting.
Sure. But not hurting doesn't mean you're doing great. It's like saying, I went and saw that movie, it's not bad. It doesn't mean it's stupendous. It just means it's not in the tank.
Okay, so I was being deliberately over diminutive.
Sure, of course they're making
money
hand
over fist.
When
you're trading places for the most valuable company in the world, you're doing excellent.
Agreed. They're doing they're not hurting by any means. They're making tons of money. But if they went from here's our phone and here's our tablet, that's it, that's all, and now they're having fairly substantiated two phone sizes, and clearly they have at least two, potentially three iPad sizes. They didn't just come up with that idea on their own. They saw that in the industry. So somebody somewhere felt that that was a viable, they were missing out on viable business that they needed to capitalize on by making those sizes.
Sure.
So that's my statement. The third reason, since we're getting a little long in this particular article, for the bonker sales is the global rollout. So far, the Apple is increasing their reliance on outside U.S. sales. The first iPhone was only released in the U.S. Until, at least on its release date, and it was later released to other European countries in the same year, but it was a limited rollout. Last year, the iPhone 5 was released in a dozen different regions on the same day, some of those regions being U.S., Japan, China, Singapore, Germany, and a few others. And the now iPhone 6 has been published that Apple has made a deal with China Mobile, who is the world's largest mobile carrier. I'm assuming that relates to number of customers, not largest range, although it could deal with both. And per this article, it appears that Apple has requested a quantity of 70 to 80 million iPhones to be ready by the end of this year. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. And to date, the most amount of iPhones sold in a single quarter was 51 million. So if they're doing a press conference in September, meaning the iPhone probably won't hit shelves till what, October, November, give or take? And they're ordering 70 to 80 million units for a global distribution for to be available before the end of the year?
That would be a huge, huge sale.
That's
could you say it would be bonkers?
Yeah,
I believe that would qualify, yes. I believe that would be bonkers.
Okay, so they're requesting that much inventory. Maybe we can try to keep track and see how many are actually sold by the end of the year.
So they're probably over-purchasing their inventory because they famously have inventory problems when they first release.
Sure.
Supply always outstrips demand.
Agreed. Before we get to the final article...
demand always outstrips supply.
Sure. Before I let Wade get to his final article, I want to touch base on the two different sizes that I said are confirmed. There was an article published about screen redesigns due to a lack of brightness. Apple decided to remove one of the layers of brightness screening or film on the phone or on the screens, but it turned out to be not bright enough, so they've had to go back and put that back in. And it was published that both the 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch screens are in production and that the 4.7-inch was in production first. The correction called it a halt in production for part of June and part of July. The output is rumored to be back on track by some of the plants in China, Japan, and I think it's Vietnam or Korea. I'm not sure which one. One of those has got a plant. But it was explicitly stated that both the 4.7 and 5.5 screens were in production. So, for your rumor mills, I hope that puts you at ease or gets you excited, or both.
Yes.
Okay. Wade, back to you.
Well, continuing on, I think which is kind of a heavy note. We're going to drop the hammer with this. A group of hackers labeling themselves the Lizard Squad. Kind of odd for a group of hackers, but all right. Have begun DDoSing, attacking large video game companies. Now, I'm not particularly sure what DDoSing is.
Brad.
So, yeah, exactly. I was going to throw it to our computer guy.
It is called it stands for a distributed denial of service attack. Essentially, it's where bad guys have taken over a bunch of computers, and by a bunch, we're generally talking in the tens and hundreds of thousands, and used them to simultaneously request, like for instance, if you DDoS a website, I would get my 10,000 or 50,000 computers that I have compromised and control to all go to that website at the same time, essentially flooding them with what looks like legitimate traffic, to the point that the web server can no longer handle it and crash.
Ah.
The server can't distinguish that it's bad traffic, so they don't block it. It gets through their filters, but because there's so much of it, it just bottlenecks the pipe.
Yep.
Okay, then. There we go. A little short summary of what that was. Such companies that were affected were the Microsoft's Xbox Live servers.
That sucks.
Blizzard Entertainment's Hearthstone servers.
That sucks.
Valve 2's Dota Valve's Dota 2 servers.
Yeah, whatever.
Sony's PSN PlayStation Network servers. As
that
well.
Sucks. And, are you sensing a theme here yet?
And as here's the kicker, as well as these attacks, the group also put out a bomb threat on the flight that SOE, Sony Online Entertainment President John Smedley, I'm sorry if I'm saying the wrong, Smeldey.
It's a very American slash white name for a CEO of Sony.
The flight that he was on. So the flight was then diverted and then checked for explosives. Doing this threat, the FBI have been called in due to that, saying that this is, due to this threat, it's a matter of national security. So, yeah. There's an update from the PlayStation.blog has confirmed that there is no personal info was stolen from these attacks. So it's this group doing this for fun. And now continuing on with the group has also taken to doing taunts on Twitter, saying things such as, anyone having trouble logging into Xbox Live? Question mark.
So they're just trolling the hell out of everybody.
Yeah, they're doing it for their own kicks.
Those rat bastards.
Yeah, but on top of all their trouble, now threatening, making a false threat on an aircraft is a major, major federal charge.
Yeah. And
assuming they get caught.
And to that point, assuming they get caught, that's the thing. How do I want to spin this?
I don't know. How do you want to spin this?
I think there's an update on the news site as of this podcast being recorded that there has been no new attacks to my knowledge. So I think what they did is someone got a little too giddy and then posted up this threat. And I think the group has kind of settled down and saying, guys, this went a little too far.
I think we actually pushed the limit on this one.
So now that the FBI is in on this, I mean, it's, you know,
they're in some deep doo-doo.
Yeah, exactly. So not only we, you know, okay, so they're getting their kicks. Someone went a bit too far and is now have the FBI on their cases. I mean, I don't know what a sentence is if caught for, would it be vandalism for tampering with the servers of the DDoS? But then I don't know if it's like it's probably a felony for that.
Oh, I'm sure it's a felony.
National security.
Yeah,
so
they don't take bomb threats lightly anymore.
Nope.
So, boys and girls, don't threaten a bomb. Don't
Anywhere.
Anywhere. Schools, work, planes, buses. It's not going to go well.
Yeah, it's never a good idea.
And no. This has always just been a question of mine is, you know, how sick do you have to be to screw with other people's fun? To knowingly create a virus or just cause someone a bad day makes you a pretty terrible person.
There's no argument with that one.
So I just don't understand why people write viruses or even do this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one thing to try to exploit for money, but just to do it for the sheer kick sociopathic of it, joy? Don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah? Yeah. No.
No. No. Don't get it.
Show title!
Are you... I like it. Well, with that... You guys have anything further to add?
I got nothing else other than I hope these guys get caught because they deserve it.
I agree.
Agreed.
All right, guys. Well, with that, that's going to do it, obviously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with some more Nautinus.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.